have who I heard come on, and then anybody that I don't call, let me know if you're here. Jordan Girth, Ido Gosden, Ed Mandel, I wrote down Kevin McGrath. I don't know why I did that. Are you on, Kevin?
Now exiting.
That's Sport.
There goes Sport. Deb Molinar, Brian Mata, and then Doug and Frank from Raytheon. Anybody else on right now? Okay.
Now joining,
Steve Miller, Sarah.
Steve. Who just joined? Okay. Again, Jordan has agreed to...
now joining,
NASA Sport.
Jordan has agreed to run us through the action item. He also is willing to record proceedings here as long as nobody objects. Are there any objections to doing that? Okay, with Doug and Frank?
Oh, yeah, it's good.
Okay. All right, Jordan, are you still able to do that?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So we'll do that. So the main thrust of today is to go through the action items that we generated at our last technical interchange. So Jordan will run us through those actions, and then we can discuss other areas of interest at the end. So that would be the plan, and... I will just turn it over to Jordan then. Unless, Ed, did you have anything you wanted to say, or Doug or Frank, before we start?
I don't have anything. Everything went well the last time, and I assume this will go the same way.
Okay. Not Doug, good. Do you have anything you want to say before we get started?
I'm good. Let's go.
Okay. All right, Jordan, take it away.
Okay, thank you. For those of you who should have the list of action items compiled by Bill Campbell, in your email, but I will start and go through them here. I'm not sure on the first one. The action was work to collect and distribute information on the MacITS area plugins currently developed by Raytheon, NSEP, and Sport so that a unified decoder can be delivered operationally to support the experimental product ingest. For those of you that checked your email just an hour or so before this telecon, I see Dave Plummer had said that NSEP had delivered their version of the area decoder to Raytheon Technical Services for inclusion in the build, and I believe the display end was to be delivered today. So I think we should see an end-to-end of that MacITS area plugin, at least from NSEP, in the near future. I don't know how long it takes RTS to turn that around, redeliver it back to the Weather Service, and that to get to the partners. I haven't heard anything else from Raytheon. I know they had at one time delivered developed a internal MacITS area plug-in. There was very few details on that, and I also have not heard anything from Sport on the work of theirs and the functionality of that decoder.
Now joining,
Eric from Pacific Region.
So, is there anybody that wants to comment on that?
Yeah, I think the Raytheon, this is Frank from Raytheon, I think the Raytheon MacITS plug-in was kind of a prototype-y thing that was done probably a couple years ago now. It wouldn't nearly be at the level that the INSEP one would be.
Will the NSEP one go out in an AWIPS 2 release in the future, or how is that handled?
I think it's scheduled, or not, I wouldn't use the word schedule, but it's slated to be included in the basic AWIPS 2 baseline at some point in the future. I couldn't tell you exactly when, but we try to keep in contact with it, and we have integrated some of their work already in other areas. So it's just a matter of working it into the AWIP to DR process.
Okay.
Well, that, yeah, let me just say one thing. Getting into the DR process means that it would be rationalized against all the other DRs that are being done right now. And so, you know, the way the service can decide what the criticality is.
So will Raytheon continue supporting it thereafter?
Probably.
Yeah, once it's in the baseline, yeah, that would... for maintenance changes and stuff, yeah, we would do that.
This is Ed. I think Doug, this is part of just the bringing in the NAWIP's baseline into AWIP. So once that's in there, I mean that's really the point of when those folks will have access to the newest version, not just the current NSEP version that they have.
I think that's right.
That really doesn't tie to DR. That's just something that we have to do as part of AWIPs.
Yeah. I don't know what the schedule for that is, though, Ed.
Understood that. Understand that part. I think it's,
looking for my piece of paper that tells me that.
I guess what I was getting at, Ed, was that if that was too far in the future for these folks, then you might be able to expedite it through some kind of DR.
Yeah.
But it's probably better just to leave.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're talking like, March, April time frame, at the latest-ish, I think.
Okay.
Maybe that helps put it in perspective for the moment. But I can get more details on exactly when that's going to be available via the baseline and totally integrated. I'd be glad to take that action.
Okay, is that Ed?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, thanks. I think it would be good to have a time frame in place because... more importantly for me, really, is looking at the display end. I wrote an email to a few people back at our, not really our technical interchange meeting, but one of our proving ground meetings back in last May of 2010. We discussed the capability for this 24-bit display. And one of the things that happened maybe a little unexpectedly was that we have this new unlimited overlay feature in AWIPS 2 that was not in AWIPS 1, and then we were kind of surprised to see come out and be approved in the middle of the summer. So really when it comes down to 24-bit display now and making sure that works, it's going to come down to really how the MacITus format is displayed because the other satellite data, the operational format, is still confined to 8 bits. So having a good time frame for when we will see those at least will help me to investigate what additional work would be needed, if any, to maximize the capability of a single format which can display in 24 bits.
Understood.
Yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to tie that in because there had been a little bit of change in how the 24-bit capability was engineered in the software since when we talked last May, which I think is a great thing because it saves me from having to do some work on that end. So,
how's that?
Anyway.
I'm going to tell people that.
So, Jordan, do you have the capability now to do a 24-bit display?
We can do a 24-bit display. And, really... if you can do it with any three satellite products. What I've been working on is trying to get some of our pose imagery into the software, and really looking a bit closer at how I believe it's SAT blended resource and SAT blended resource data works. Mainly just to see. I think it really comes down to the alpha channel and the brightness of that composite. I think the compositing feature actually works fine. And also looking at what may need to be done to make that more accessible. I think it would be nice to have a 255 to 0 red, blue, and green color bar And then essentially you can assign that to each satellite product, and then when you overlay them, that's essentially the RGB that we desire, even though we're taking three 8-bit products. So, you know, right now, I think the user still really, to maximize that functionality, really has to go point by point and load a product, change the color enhancement, and then load the next product, change the color enhancement, load the next product, change the color enhancement. It'd be nice if I could somehow figure out how to add a button, and GUIs aren't really my thing, so I'm not sure how much work I'm going to be able to get done on that, but to load up three things and then somehow click a button and it turns into an RGB.
This is Frank. I maybe just comment on that a little bit. I think there's a couple ways of doing it. One way would be to do it in the Java code, and then you end up having a single image that gets displayed. But I think a more interesting way of doing it would be to load the three 8-bit pieces into the graphics card as textures, and then have the shader language do that mapping that you talk about, and then you could actually have slider bars and such on the screen that you could adjust each channel and so on, and it would be all interactive.
Mm-hmm.
Really quick comment from Steve Miller. Some of the products that we're talking about in RGB land would not benefit from the user being able to dynamically do things like that. In fact, it would, in some cases, mess the product up or enhance things that were never supposed to be enhanced. I don't know if this is possible or not, but if there was something behind the scenes that just did all of this loading and combining as just an assumed pre-processing step without ever having to engage the user in physically loading three different bands and scaling them appropriately and whatnot. I know that some way in some products that is a good thing to do and it's useful, but in others it may not be.
Yeah, well, Steve, yeah, that's a good point. One thing I've been looking at the structure of some of the XML files, where they also call this SAT blended resource. And I haven't tested it out yet, but I think it may be possible to put three different bands in there and that in an XML file and then load a single menu item and it would do everything. But that would be for a predefined three-channel combination.
There is quite a bit of capability along that line. You might look at the water vapor, I think it's called the water vapor divided by IR menu item.
Right.
And what's behind the scene on that is a piece of Python code that does the blending and creates the product for display. So that's probably more closer to what you want to do, because that could take multiple channels and manipulate them and then create a product for display.
Yeah, exactly. And I've actually been looking really closely at those Python scripts. The one thing, I guess, that's kind of interesting for me that I've tried to get my head around is that on those examples, anytime image subtractions, we're working with 8-bit space. So, yeah, I think something can be done there. The other thing I thought was a little interesting with regards to those Python scripts was exactly how time matching is done. It appears that you need to have the files have required to have the same time in order to blend them.
Well, I think they're... Yeah, that may be true, but it's possible to relax the time matching rules. And if you're doing kind of scientific stuff, you may want to relax them somewhat. I think for the port that we did for AWIPS 2, I think they wanted from exactly the same satellite at exactly the same time.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily have to be that way.
Do you go ahead?
Oh, the other thing I wanted to comment on that might be a little further down these questions, but it doesn't have to be 8-bit. The mechanism should scale in terms of bytes. So I think if I understand it right, the record format and metadata has a the number of bytes per you know, the depth of the record.
Yeah.
And now for all the stuff that we're doing in AWIP 2, I think most of it's 1 byte, but it could be 2 or 3 or 4. And we use a lot of the same mechanisms with gridded data, which is all 32-bit float. But kind of interesting point there is that we load that 32-bit array into the graphics card.
Mm-hmm.
Gridded data.
Quick question here. How do you foresee the data would be transmitted then? I'm thinking in terms of Steve Miller's products that are 24-bit, would we transmit 3 separate files, RGB, and then it would be somehow combined on the fly, or would we be able to send this all in one file, scaled?
I don't know. I'll take that question, I guess. I would envision that you would send 3. At this point, now, this is all pending a review of this AWIPS, the Mechitis area decoder. But, you know, using the current software, I could envision you can send 3 separate 8-bit arrays, and then use those.
Yeah, that would fit with kind of the way it's done now because, you know, for example, the Gini format, I think the data comes one record at a time, and each record is a separate file.
That would work for us, too. That's the way we currently send our Google Earth products. So
okay. So that's...
And then you could have that Python script do the combining and making the composite.
Yeah, I think that sounds good.
Yeah, that should work. Okay, that's good. I haven't anything from Sport on their AWIPS area format. Decoder?
Okay. This is Jason. We started working on it, and we got it working using the NetCDF library. So we're using the area decoder from the area file decoder from there. But we got it to the point where we got it to display, you know, a certain range of different kinds of projections. And it pretty much decoded all of the different products, and we populated the database so that we could, using the satnot or satnot file.
Satnot,
yeah. And so we can decode the full suite of Mechitis products, but at that time, you know, then we heard about NTEP was working on theirs, was pretty close to being done, and so we've kind of backed off from it, and we've been working on some other plugins related to Sport products specifically. So, we kind of left that for now, and we're not actively working on it. But we certainly, you know, we're interested to see what NTEP has. We did do visualization development on that too, so we have gotten it to visualize and do all that stuff.
Okay.
Basically following the same model as the satellite plugin that was delivered with the, you know, with the AWIPS 2 AE.
So what version of AWIPS 2 is the current Mechitis plugin from NCEP built with?
The data decoder, I believe, is in R1G17.
That's delivered with R1G17?
Yeah.
Well, it might be built against that.
Yeah, I guess I don't know exactly the release it came out with. It was delivered to Raytheon at the end of October, was my understanding.
All right, but this is Ed Mandel. I'll chase that down. I'm sitting here and somebody else is with me. We're both scratching our heads. So.
Okay.
I think 7 would be right, but I'm not sure.
A quick question for the sport folks. What other plugins are you working on?
Go ahead.
Now joining.
We have Greg Gross, LMA.
We have one to display data from our lightning mapping array that is in NetCDF format.
Yeah. Yeah, the data comes in NetCDF and
we grid it.
Yeah, basically a grid data set. Then the other plugin, do you have a smoke plugin?
Yeah, we're getting smoke data in KML format from, is that from
Hazardous Florida? Weather Test Pit. Right?
And then from the Maryland.
HMT? Oh, shoot, I can't remember. One comes from Ferns. Well, Ferns, we're getting the Emotus hotspot. Also a
smoke.
A hazard mapping.
Polygon.
There you go.
Hazard mapping.
That's what it is. The three-letter acronym. Hazardous mapping service. So we have a couple of fire hotspot plugins, a smoke plugin, which reads in KML format, and then this NetCDF-based lightning mapping array plugin.
And each of those has a EDUX plugin for decoding and has a visualization plugin. The visualization plugins range from polygon representations to single points or fire hotspots, and then we've dealt with gridded data, and we've obviously done the satellite Makaitis plugin.
So. Okay. All right, so I guess if anything comes out of this, that it sounds like as far as the area format goes, we're all going to kind of unite behind this NCEP, NCEP decoder. So, and I guess we'll go from there. I've been looking through the source. Looking in my R1G17, I don't see the Raytheon decoder in there, all except for... SIGMETs.
It was a prototype that was done in our kind of research and development group.
Okay.
And that stuff doesn't get included in the baseline.
Okay. And I don't see the NCEP one in there either.
No, you won't, because it's not in there yet.
Okay, I'll find that one.
Okay.
Get that back to you guys.
Is there any way we can get like our hands on the NCEP plugin before it gets into the Raytheon thing?
I think the answer is yes. I think it's available.
From whom?
Jordan, did we pass that on to you? From the NCEP folks passed? Is Dave Plummer on the line?
Nope. Nobody's passed the... I've not seen anything from Raytheon, or excuse me, anything from NCEP with regards to the area plug-in.
Oh.
This is Greg from the SPC. There was a... They just had another teleconference that I just got off on, and he was on that. They just turned in or submitted some code today, and I know it involved NMAP, so it may include that plugin as well.
The display end was delivered today, so there's a reason why we wouldn't see that yet. But the data decoder was delivered at the end of October, so... I was expecting to see it. I just installed R1G17 earlier this week, so I haven't spun up yet. But I don't think it's in R1G17, so maybe it's going to be in the next release, unless anybody else has information on that.
Again, this is it. I'll follow up.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, if somebody could figure that one out, appreciate it. Okay. All right, moving on to number two here, unless there's anything else on number one, area plugins. Okay. Number two, Raytheon needs to describe, the action was Raytheon needs to further describe how the legends are created and displayed, information on the shader language and process, and also important The maximum minimum values are parameterized when data selection occurs, and that controls what you see on the screen as far as color. And the action was for Raytheon to provide comments on how their code works for the display legends.
Okay, yeah, I can try to talk about that a little bit. In general, the on the display side, there's a satellite resource Java code.
Yep.
Builds the legend, and it does it by grabbing data out of the satellite records metadata. And it's primarily the times and the physical element that it uses. Then there's a another file that maps that physical element to a human readable name, a satellite constant.
Okay.
It's called. So that's what you see on the screen. And if it doesn't have a physical element isn't mapped to anything human readable, it'll just display the physical element as it is in the metadata.
Okay.
And you can see all that by looking at that SAT resource code.
Okay, so I opened up satellite constants here, and there's a bunch of private static final strings which essentially outline how the product ID in that file. Is that to say that in order to get a product legend to display, we would need to add it, or
no? Not necessarily. If you look at the SAT resource code itself, that get legend mechanism, if it doesn't have it mapped in there, it'll just display the metadata itself.
Okay, so it'll just display what's in the metadata entry.
Yeah. And which might be slightly, you know, hieroglyphic, but still, you know, most people will probably know what they're looking at.
Okay. Yeah, so I guess my question is, and maybe this came out at the last one too, is why are those essentially built hard-coded into the EDEX? Why aren't those in the XML where, like, the style information is?
That's a good question, why it was done the way it was. It might have been historical, because this was one of the first plugins that were written.
Mm-hmm.
And the style stuff evolved a little later.
Okay.
It would make sense to put all that in the style, imagery, satellite imagery style thing, I guess. Would think, but it wasn't done that way.
Okay. Is there any chance we can submit that for design discussion at some point, or is that kind of out now?
No, it's anything's fair game. What you could do is write a TTR, I guess, and it would enter the food chain of review.
Okay.
You know, that would make it a little more flexible to make changes to how the image, to how the labels are displayed. Now, I think, you know, for AWIPS 2 as a black box replacement at AWIPS 1, nobody would care, you know, how it's done now. But it's when you're dealing with new satellite data that you do care. And I think in the future people will care more than they do now. So it's probably a worthwhile thing to change.
I mean, it
So it'll have to be done, you know, for us, at this point in the ballgame, to make any kind of a change, we have to go through this CTR-DR process.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, having the things that, anything that's in the style on the display, for us who bring in custom products, it's going to make it a lot easier for us, if we don't, if we're trying to explain something to our end user and deliver it, that we may not get the metadata entry right, or, you know, as you say, it could be a little obscure. So if we could put that all in a style info, similar to how we do it now with AWIPS 1, that would be, I guess, for me to be desirable. I don't know how others on the call feel about that, other than trying to add something to satellite constants or whatever, or do an override or an extension. Okay, good. No comments on that. All right, anything else on action item number 2? Okay. Number 3, tell us at what this was for Raytheon again, or maybe this one, it says at Raytheon's Omaha facility, so maybe this one we can bypass, but is there any more information at what point in the ingest and display process is the conversion between bit space and value space performed? Looks like that's on the ingest side.
Well, you know, we don't do anything on the ingest side typically with the data. Whatever it comes in as is what it gets stored as. And in most cases, that's actually the way it gets put into the graphics card. So then it's the style rules, that give you a mapping mechanism to a value, engineering type value.
The one thing I did notice, I was looking, going through the metadata that's written into the, I think, metadata AWIPS.satellite table, and a little thing that I found curious was that the units, were something that were stored in that metadata, so it apparently... at ingest time, must somehow ascertain the units from that file.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that's used consistently. That metadata for the satellite record reflects the header in the Genie format, pretty much. And not all those fields end up being used. You almost have to trace them through to see which ones are and aren't.
Yeah, and... I think that was one of the other actions. There's nothing, we don't know of anything that, that's number 8, determine what from the metadatabase is actually used for discovery and display. It's really, there's no document on that.
Yeah, the easiest way to answer that question is to look at the fields that become part of the data URI.
Okay.
And that's a subset of the total, and only those would be used for discovery.
Okay. I guess for display, the other interesting thing in this metadatabase is that the majority, all of them except for this one single low cloud product, this upper right lat and upper right lawn are set to 0, which makes me believe it goes to this satellite spatial table and uses the generating ID to find the mapping information in there. Is that...
Yeah, well, I think it uses the geometry. So there's the Postgres database, it could store basically a geometry record.
Uh-huh.
And that's the GIS part of it. So the satellite coverage is created and stored in there, I believe. So that's what's used to Earth locate it and everything. And that's the same across the board for all the data types that have, well, most all the data types have a GIS component to them, but that's kind of a consistent way of doing it. So I don't think the corner points are really necessary.
Okay.
Because that includes the, you know, the projection and the space between the pixels and all that.
Right,
kind of
DX, DY, NX, NY.
Yeah,
I looked in there.
The geometry is a very complete object.
Yeah, that that makes sense to me. Okay, with regards to action item number 3, is there anybody else that has a question or comment on this? No? Okay. Number 4, this, based on last Tim, we had some discussion about completing the transaction of ingesting the product to assure that it is end-to-end finished. How do we assure that when we ingest a product that it's entered into the data repository?
Yeah, I asked my database person that deals with this kind of thing. And there isn't really a formal mechanism right now in the system for that.
Mm-hmm.
It would be possible to turn on what they call XA transactions to make sure that happens, but that would, like, performance-wise, be a big hit. So there would be some lower-level ways of accommodating it. And one suggestion he had would be is to set up a bid later queue that if a file fails somewhere, that it gets put in that so that you know that it didn't make it. And you preserve it.
Okay.
That would be one pretty unintrusive way of doing it. And I think AWIPS 1 actually, some of their decoders work that way. If it fails somewhere along the line, it just puts it in a special place.
Yeah, that AWIPS 1 works kind of real well that way with the decoders. You write them into the raw directory, the decoder reads it. If it's successful, it'll delete it. If it fails at any point, even if the data record is ultimately written in AWIPS 1, but there's some other issue with the decoding of it, it will still move it to the bad directory so that we get a chance to try again if we want, I guess. Or it just gets deleted if it's just anomalous in one way or the other. So
there's nothing really equivalent to that yet in AWIPS 2. I'm sure there'll be something in the future, but I'm not sure exactly what it'll look like. You know, to be able to track bad data.
Okay, is
that
something?
The main purpose of it,
right? Is there anything that would get us to the point to that point before the software is officially released? The it's deployed to the field, or is it something that's
going
to be down the line?
I think, if I remember right, the logging would indicate if something failed, and the data store still would have the data file in it. The data comes off of the SBN and into the it goes to the LDN, and then that deposits it in the data store. It doesn't really get deleted from there at all.
Right.
So I think it would be possible. That's how we, I think, find bad data is going from the error messages to the data store. So it's kind of a little more awkward workaround, but
okay. So is the field going to keep a bunch of raw data? I remember at one point that, you know, they were going to archive the raw data, and that was going to be used for their West cases. They were going to try to feed it back through.
Yeah, I think there's the intention to keep a certain amount of that available. And there's a partition on the NAS for that, and I think that would be the idea. I really don't know exactly how long they would keep it, but.
This is Greg at the SPC. WDTV is just down on the other side of the building, and our latest talks with them indicate that they're going to archive the HDF5 and do a database dump of the tables to create case studies.
Yeah, that's correct. But they're also going to have a capability of creating it from the data store data, too, I believe. But their preferred method would be to take the HDF5 and the database.
I know WDTB had also said they were going to propose, I know what they did with the radar was break those data files down on the URI side down to smaller files, I think, by time and radar site, rather than putting them down into all one bin like we do with satellite data. I don't know. Do you know if those TTRs are in the system?
Yes, but all the West, we had a TIM with them late fall, and there was a series of DRs generated that are in the enhancement category, I believe. So all their changes to accommodate their test cases and that capability are in the system now.
So the DRs are in the system, or the DRs have been...
The DRs are in the system, not the
changes.
That they've been worked on.
Okay. Can somebody take the action? Maybe I know where the DR database is too, but to see if there's anything in those DRs about if they're going to change the satellite data storage, or if that's a proposed DR, I should say.
This is Ed Mandel. There's not a DR for changing the satellite storage, but since I'm managing the SREC, which is we start to gather stuff for future AWS releases, and that is on my list for future AWS releases.
Okay. So that'll go through SREC.
Goes through SREC, and you got it.
Okay. All right. All right. I think, anything else, any questions on number four from anybody out there? No? Okay. Number five was with regards to the JAI libraries. We talked about limitations and file size limitations with really large data sets. Has there been any thing done to find out if there really is an upper quantitative limit on what could end up being big satellite data sets that we try to ingest high resolution? I will say that in R1G17, I did see in the HDF5 bins that they're now storing multiple images for the same scan and band. That is, they're at like various resolutions. They must be like subsampled or something. My guess is.
Let me describe that a little
bit. Okay.
With particularly like the VIS channel of the GOES data that comes in. That's in I believe about 1 kilometer resolution. That gets decimated, I think, 5 times. In the kind of a quad decimation type mechanism, and that's done by JAI. So the HDF5 stores each of those different decimations. So as you zoom, in and out, you're grabbing different resolutions of the data. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So you get the higher resolution one as you get on higher scales.
Yeah, and there's kind of a I think we're using HDF5 chunking for this, which creates the concept of tiles. So each layer then is retrieved in this by kind of tiles.
Okay.
That covers the display area plus a little more. So then as you pan and zoom, you're going back and grabbing the right tiles and at the right decimation out of the HDF5 file. So that kind of creates the Google experience for that type of data. But, I mean, there are limitations with JAI that are special projects people have come across. And the implementations of JAI are very somewhat. So I think the Sun implementations that's used for Linux and Windows actually use C code behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So they perform better than I think like IBM's or Apple's or other versions of the JVM, which try to do the JAI thing in Java. Now there's a workaround when that would be to tile the data before it's have a layer of tiling that happens before it hits the JAI code as part of the ingest cycle, but we haven't set that up. We haven't, you know, accommodated that yet. But that would be probably a solution.
Okay. Is there plans to do that, or is that something that we'll deal with when we get there?
I think I think we've been able to deal with the MODIS data as is. So I guess until we get to the point where we're dealing with data that's larger than that, then we start worrying about it. So there's no immediate plans to do anything with it.
Okay. So who has a really large data set out there that we can try to display?
Seems that all you really need to do is make a composite of the global, or not the global, but maybe the national scale with high-resolution MODIS throughout it. I mean, there's 1 kilometer, quarter kilometer.
I think quarter kilometer is kind of the highest resolution that we're going to want to go. I can't think of a satellite product that's going to be higher than quarter kilometer.
Right.
Okay. Well, maybe somebody can try. Sport, have you tried to display quarter kilometer data in AWIPS 2?
We did 250 meter. It had a tough time trying to load more than just a few images at that national scale 250 meter resolution.
That was a whole pass you fed in, I assume?
Now, this was a hybrid.
Oh, is that?
This was creating putting oversampling a GOES image to 250 meter resolution and inserting a MODIS swath into it. We did in AWIPS 2, yeah. And this was a while ago, so maybe several versions of AWIPS 2 have happened since we did that. We haven't tried it in a while, but looping was difficult way back when.
Okay. Would it be appropriate to give you an action to try that again?
Yes, before our next meeting.
Okay.
Get back to the point we want.
Okay, thanks. Anything else with regards to JAI libraries and really large data sets? Questions? Okay. Number six was work with Raytheon to determine how the shader language works with the graphics card for displaying satellite imagery at larger than 8 bits, as well as compositing multiple images. I know a little bit more now on this, Tim, about compositing multiple images. Still not real up to par on how the shader language works with the graphics card. Is there any, Raytheon, any additional information on that?
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm on mute. This is Frank. I was trying to answer that.
Oh, okay. Yep.
But basically, the shader language is been pulled out into a separate file, so it's easy to find. And they have a file extension of GLSL. And there's really only one involved in the satellite stuff, but I think it's called ColorMap. And it's just like a half a page of code. And all it really does is map the color table, which has been stored into the graphics card as a one-dimensional texture of quads, you know, RGB alpha.
Yep.
And so it just maps that to the image pixel value. And then there's a little bit of logic in there. And it also, I believe, takes the input from the slider bars for brightness and contrast and so on. And combines that, and it also controls the creation of the color bar that's up in the corner. But I think before that happens, you know, the style rules have been applied, and so the image has been, you know, before it's actually loaded in the graphics card, the image has been dealt with by the style rules, and the style rules are specific for each data element, and it specifies the color table and whether the color table is linear or logarithmic, and I think the min-max value and the engineering value for display. So it's useful to look at the satellite resource and how the style rules get applied to understand part of it, and then the shader language itself is pretty simple.
Okay.
Hey Frank, is there any documentation that you guys have that we could look at? I know at one time I was at a Tim and you guys had some cave, like you had just gone through a refactoring of how you did cave and resources, and you had some documentation written up, and you provided that to the group that I was there with. Do you guys have any documentation regarding the use of shader languages?
No, unfortunately we don't. It's pretty far down into the guts of the system, and yeah, so we really haven't produced any documentation on it. And I have to admit, you know, you have to get down to reading the code itself to kind of follow it through. That's unfortunate, I guess, but there's not that much involved, so it's not too bad, at least for satellite data.
And what's the is that satellite resource? That's the name of the file?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the satresource.java is the primary, like, overall manager of how the display for satellite data works.
Okay.
It's the one that builds the legend and grabs the style rules, applies those, and all that stuff. It has the sampling, you know, when you sample.
Uh-huh.
What happens when you sample.
Okay. All right. Any other questions on number six for Raytheon?
Yeah, Jordan, this is Brian. I'm wondering, is that documented somewhere, Frank, other than in the code itself?
No.
No, okay. All right, thanks.
Okay, without anything else, number seven. Well, this was is pretty much right along the same lines. Discussing with Raytheon the linking colors to value mappings and defining a maximum and minimum for the displayed range, that's definitely in the style rules.
Yeah. And some of, you know, like this is just 0 to 255. But if you look in the style rules, you'll see that some of the other channels are more complicated.
Yeah, I guess the one thing that would be a little vexing as we transition is we now go more toward a formulaic approach instead of like a piecewise definition, because I don't recall anywhere in AWIPS 2. In AWIPS 1, we used to set, for the most part, we used to set our color bars by defining a data value to a display value. So we would set, you know, 128, you know, bit 128 to minus 50C in the IR legend. Now it looks like that's formulaic actually on the EDEX side. Is that correct?
I think it's more done on the CAVE side with the resources being applied. You know, the style rules being applied to the resource.
But the style rules. Sorry. The style rules don't seem to have anything with regards to... the style rules tell you, you know, exactly how that little color bar at the top of the screen, first of all, the max and min of that, and then the actual display points. So I could display a range of 0 to 100 and show 20, 40, 60, 80. But it doesn't tell me that 20... corresponds to data value, you know, 128, and 40 corresponds to data value 140. So there's no opportunity for a piecewise function in there, for example, with linear spacings or something like that. It's all linear or logarithmic.
Well, yeah, I think it's kind of just, and I'm not sure where it would be, but I, you know, if you look at the color wheel dialogue.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that can, you know, like for the IR satellite color table, it's set up, I think with a linear section and then a bunch of discrete colors after you get about halfway up.
Yeah.
But I guess what that ends up doing is just building the XML color table. That's the result of that.
I thought I saw something called like irpixel.java, or there's a whole bunch of similar related things. I think maybe we want to look a little more into this. Leave that action item open. We still need to figure that one out. I think on the display side, I think I've got that figured out for the most part. Exactly how we go from data space to display space, where that's done would be important. If it's on the CAVE side, I would like some more guidance as to where that is.
I gave that question to one of my developers, and he added the comment, and I'll just read it. you know, sometimes the data will get converted from bit space to a value space before the imagery, you know, image is created. And then the color mapping happens in value space instead of bit space. But then he says the indexing mechanism is still the same once it's in the graphics card.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, I guess in some cases, there's a lot of manipulation going on in the Java before it's loaded.
Okay. All right. Is there any other comments on that? Okay, on to number 8. I think we already talked about this, but we'll ask for any additional comments. Determine what from the metadatabase is actually used for discovery and what's actually used for display. And I think at some point there's another action item of the partners as to when it comes to NPP and GOSAR, identifying what needs to be handled in the metadatabase and what needs to be stored in the HDF5. I guess for those of you that are a little unfamiliar, the HDF5 appears to, you know, essentially just have the data URI stored in like a group type architecture. And the metadatabase contains everything else. And I guess to some extent we really don't know all of what in that metadatabase for satellite is used. Is there any other comments?
The most important items are the ones that make up the data URI, because those are the ones that are also used to reference the data in the HDF5. So the HDF5 schema reflects the sort of the hierarchical structure of the data URI. So I think it goes, well, I can't remember exactly how it goes, but if you look at, open up an HDF5 file, look at it, you'll see that it correctly reflects the data.
Yeah, for satellite, I dumped one out here. For the satellite data, it's group, and then group satellite, and then group date and time, then group NESDIS, which must be the provider, and then group composite, supranational, and then gridded cloud amount for a derived product. And then finally data set data appears what that is. So yeah, that makes up the data URI.
Yeah, and that's the field that would be used for discovery purposes. The other thing you can do is in CAVE, you can bring up the product browser.
Okay.
Which directly reflects the data that's used for discovery.
Yeah, that's kind of neat.
And then, of course, there's other metadata items that are used for the geolocation stuff. Would be the spatial column, and then I'm not sure about the rest of it. Again, you have to kind of trace the item through. And I know a number of them are not used, because I tried to trace through a few of them this morning, and I couldn't find any references to them, so it's like not all of them are used, I know.
Yeah. Okay. Does anybody have any additional comments? Is there anything, I guess, from the partners? I don't know what Bill Campbell got back, but is there anything from the partners of what you would like to see stored in the HDF5 and the metadatabase, knowing the utility of each one of those entities?
Gordon, I sent out everything I received.
Okay, so nothing on this, I assume. Okay, well, we'll keep that one open in case the PG partners. The more I look at it, the more I think it's probably fine the way it is, but we'll go from there. Okay. Number 10 was a sample project, and we really, I know Steve Miller talked a little bit about this. We should really try to put together a sample project using the display to combine polar and geostationary data dynamically, maximum coverage, maximum resolution product as part of the display. Last time Raytheon said this was probably within the range of what we can do by relaxing the time matching or using a threshold in the time matching. I've been actually working on those Python and some NumPy stuff to combine different products. I'm a little clueless at this point about the implementation of time matching with those scripts. But has anybody else given thought to what they would like to see as a sample development project when we do actually have an in-person technical interchange meeting? No? Okay.
Hey, Jordan, this is Steve.
Steve?
I'm trying to remember what I had said about this before. What was this with regard to blending polar and geo products together into combined products?
I think it might have been, yeah. I know that was something we had talked about last time a lot, was using this, trying to blend different products. But, you know, it really could be any project. I mean, for example, I know you have data sets that you write in HDF5 that may be unique. If your project is bringing in some kind of unique data set type, which we can then broaden to apply to maybe other things that we may do within the proving ground, I think that would be an adequate project too. It has to be a shorter project since we would do it in person. So.
Right. Yeah, something, I don't know if this is related or not, Jordan, but something that was mentioned earlier today on email, I think, was having to do with a bunch of different kinds of satellite data, polar and geo and what have you, all being put into a single bin, an hourly bin or something like that.
Yep.
Not quite sure if that relates to this or not, or how you might be able to get in there and actually match things up head-to-head and see which ones are best matched in time.
And
so that you would be able to do this kind of combined product.
Right. Well, I mean, all the satellite data at this point is going into the same bin. I don't know, I guess a good question to be answered is, does the Machitis area go into this satellite bin? And I don't know the answer to that. Or if those are going to go into a separate a data bin.
Yeah. It seems like right now we don't maybe have enough of the basic understanding of how things are.
I think once we get the area, Machitis area code delivered to us, we should have a better foot forward. And also along those lines, I guess it still is, we're talking about converting products, is what is the latest field deployment date for this software? Because this is really the date that the proving ground members have to target to deliver their changes in product format and installation delivery. Ed Mandel?
Yeah, I'm here. The delivery of the AWS migration is supposed to be, you are supposed to complete field OT&E on September 30th of 2011. And then we would start deployments and installations after that. And right now, at least when I'm doing planning for releases, I'm thinking our first quarterly release would probably be in the winter of 2012, you know, maybe like January.
So we're looking at, we pretty much got all of 2011 to get ready.
Yep.
Okay.
To be ready to start putting out new functionality, which is, I think, what you want to do as far as the product and stuff.
Yep. Okay. So.
And then part of my SREC thing is we'll plan out, you know, the development and stuff
and see, you know, what releases we can, you know, they're not all going to be ready at the same time. We'll probably try to stage it, so on and so forth.
Okay. And I know you're also behind the governance, which is something that's not quite lifted off the ground yet.
But I'm ready to... It had lifted off, and then I landed it.
Okay.
And I'm ready to take off again.
Okay.
Hopefully we have a better plane.
Better weather?
Better weather. And so, in fact, I was going to pull together the group of folks who I had been engaging before, and I've been thinking of January 24th of a kickoff meeting, kind of re-engaging the group and going through things and then following through on the rest of the stuff. We have lots of bits and pieces of stuff, so it's not a start from the beginning, and I had gone through a while as we had kind of come up with goals and what folks wanted to get out of it, so there's a lot of good background information. Raytheon had done some work. We've done some work here, so my goal is within the next couple of months to really have a good first draft. And also, we do have a draft software development plan, which we're using, we process, which we use here in SEC, you know, for our new development folks we have, and we're going to be sharing that too with folks, so you can have a idea of that. But that's just one piece of the governance. There's lots of other pieces as far as definition of what we're going to do and integration and the testing, deployment, and all those types of things.
Yeah, I know that's something that would be very, very valuable for us. So appreciate.
Yeah, I know it's been. I can use this excuse of Eclipse too that's gotten in the way, but but now we're ready. We got to do it. So
all right,
we're in good shape, and hopefully in the next month or two, we'll do a lot of good work.
All right, thanks. Moving on to action item number 11. Developers should talk about what is done now with image blending. Subsequent TIMs should address capabilities of the graphics card. This one's kind of a reiteration of some of the other ones. Is there anything else? Any other questions, comments? Graphics card, image blending, shader language? Or have we pretty much answered everything for the time being? Anybody?
Yeah, hey, Jordan, it's Brian. I think a possible small project that could be done during a TIM would be to look at a large domain image composite, say of IR, and look at the spatial and temporal, thresholds or, Frank talked about relaxing those. Look at how that might be done. And then also, how mosaicing is done, how that routine works is either geographically or, how it decides which pixels from which satellite to put where.
Okay.
And we could just start with the current routine that's in place, and then build off of that.
When you're talking about which pixel from which satellite, you're talking about goes east versus goes west.
Yeah, it's just a simple, first example. We could do east and west would be sort of the first baby step.
Okay, I will add that possible small project to the list. Thanks, Brian. Anybody else? Okay, number 12, outline a strategy of how compositing and image subtraction should desirably work. Image subtractions, I've had some fun with that. We've talked a little bit about time matching already. Compositing... Does anybody else have comments? This one was really for the Gozar Proving Ground Partners to write anything about ideas for image compositing of either compositing in space or compositing in time. Is there any opinion on how that should work? Okay.
Jordan, Are we talking about things like the ability to do loops of satellite imagery as well when we're talking about compositing, or are we talking about single images with multiple data sets in a single image?
It would be multiple. I mean, multiple data sets in a single image would be how I see compositing, but I mean, there could also be a loop of composites, I guess you could say.
Okay.
I'm not sure where you're going, but...
Well, yeah, I guess either or. I mean, just to pull an example out of the air, GeoColor is itself a composite product, pre-processed as such, but then when you can go ahead and loop that, that makes it more useful than a single image, but as long as there's a good way of doing loops and things of that nature in the new AWIPS, I guess that's already addressed.
Yeah, I from what I know of the GeoColor, I think you're still going to do the compositing on your end and deliver a composited product. What we're talking about more is in terms of POSE versus MODIS versus GOES and trying to put those into a single image or using multiple data sources of the same type. And putting those on the same image, whether that be a blended TPW, microwave TPW.
One of the things that I think Sport is doing right now is they're putting this every once in a while when MODIS is available, they'll slap it on top of another GOES image, and that's sort of a kind of a layering technique. You can think about doing that with other data sets as well. We can do that offline, like in GeoColor, where we're, kind of slapping things on top of each other with dynamic transparency settings, or I guess that might be able to be done in AWIPS. That would be kind of a neat capability if it could, where you could actually take data values from your image and use and assign transparency factors to them, basically do an alpha channel on the fly. I suppose if there was a place where you would want to put in ideas for new capabilities for AWIPS 2, if that can already be done, i.e. a dynamic transparency, that would be something that would be worthwhile to submit.
Okay. There's one, I guess, kind of interesting thing. There's a little bit of difference between image subtraction and image transparency in that transparency has to do with blended resources, and image subtraction can be more done, or addition or multiplication can be more done as part of a Python script. So there's a little bit of a dichotomy that may need to be worked through there. But yeah, that's a good point. We'll keep that down in the notes. Thank you. Anything else on number 12? Okay, we're in the final minutes here. action item 13 was for Raytheon. How does the satellite decoder work? We talked a little about that last time. I don't think we need to reinstate it. But what are the specific class-level interactions within the plugin? Developer involvement is required on how to implement a new or generalized decoder and identify any interference with other classes which may result. I think this was, I think we're still on the edge of, are we going to use the satellite decoder or Makaitis decoder outright, or if we're going to try to break off an instance of that so we don't interfere with the operational processing. Any comments on that?
Well, you probably don't want to modify the satellite decoder that's in there now, because that deals with the SVN transfer of Genie data specifically. And the Makaitis plugin would be independent of that. And the question was raised earlier, and I'm not sure what the answer is, but I would assume the Makaitis plugin has its own record and storage mechanism. Its own HDFI schema and its own metadata schema, so that it would be completely independent of the Genie decoder. decoder.
Yeah, that's kind of what I would assume it would be, too.
Because that's the general mechanism in AWS, is each plugin has its own mechanism. Or its own plate, you know, for stuff. I don't know what else to say here other than it's up to the display resource that to know where to go get the data.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I think at the in person, Tim, we may be able to go through that a little bit. I think we also have to, at some point, make a decision as to whether we want to dump our experimental. Do you foresee any problem if we put our experimental products in the same data bin as the operational products?
Well, yeah, I don't. Well, not necessarily. It shouldn't cause any real issue. Because there'd be a separate record. They would have a separate metadata record pointing to it. And it would be a separate bin in the HDFI. And it would have a unique data URI that operationally nobody cares about.
Right.
So it shouldn't, that should be okay.
Okay.
I mean, that's often done now when people want to grab random data in an test data set, and they throw them in on the manual endpoint, and it'll go in based on the plugin that's already there, for that data type. On top, it'll go into the HDFI file, and it doesn't usually cause any issues.
Okay. All right, any other thing on number 13? Okay, number 14, 64-bit deployment. Ed says that's going to be part of the 2011 release. Any other news on that, Ed?
Sorry, I had my mute button on. We're putting out the infrastructure to be able to do it, but we're not necessarily turning it all on. So let me get. We've had some discussions with Raytheon about this and what we want to do with this, and there's been a white paper put out. So let me follow up on this one and get you some more information.
Okay, thank you. Number 15, do we have a document yet to specifics ingesting a local model into AWIPS 2?
I think that other than the wiki page that's in our track system, I don't think. Well, let me think about this. I guess I need to follow up on that and see if we have any further documentation.
Okay.
And if you want, just send an email off to John Olson. I mean, he has the local applications wiki page, but there's also lots of stuff out there, and maybe there's something out there about it, because I suspect some folks may have been trying to do some.
Yeah, that question's been asked a number of times, and we've probably provided multiple answers.
Isn't that going to boil down to basically writing a new ingest plugin for that particular model output?
Well, no, not necessarily. If it's a GRIB 2 or GRIB 1, there's tables and files that can get modified to accommodate it, for parameter naming and all that. You'd only need a new plugin if it's some new local model that's not in one of those two formats.
Yeah. I think part of the issue with that was that, for local models that may not be NSET models, there's the GRIB 2 formatting dictates that you need to have a center of origin and things like that. And I didn't know if there was anything special that was going to be done so that we could use a different center of origin that's not NSEP NWS, because otherwise, you know, you risk kind of encroachment of the different data header values that define that GRIB origin and record type. So I think I've seen some traffic on this on AWIPS2 dev, but we'll try to follow up with John Olson. Anything else? Okay. Is there anything, I know Ed did send out some documents on localization at the end of October. Has there been any updates to those documents, Ed?
There was in December, and actually we're now prototyping some automation that the Raytheon folks have provided. In fact, we're going to be doing that at some of our, on our Atom platforms, hopefully maybe at one or two regions, and see how that works. So
okay.
I will take the action to get you the latest localization, and maybe even want to see the scripts, automated scripts that we have.
Yeah, that would be interesting and useful. Thanks.
It's also the automation document, too.
Oh, okay, I didn't know there was a document.
There's a document on, just on the automation.
Okay, great.
Okay, and we are down to the last action item, which is the open action item for all the Proving Ground partners, which is in preparation for the next TIM to submit any questions to be considered, gather specific topics based on the results of what came out of this TIM, submit items which each participant on this call is working on or concerned about, and submit items which require design-oriented discussion, specifically in the long term. And I think we look forward in the future to holding a on-site TIM with Raytheon to work on a project, a small project together. Is there any other comments?
Question here, since federal travel is so difficult, is there any idea of when that on-site TIM is going to be? Is it going to be 2011, 2012?
I think the goal was to have it in 2011.
Yeah, it has to be in 2011 because we have to be done with this.
Any more specific than that? Like first quarter, second quarter?
What did we talk about, Doug? Do you remember? Was it May? Apparently Doug doesn't remember.
Yeah, we have the Proving Ground All Hands Face-to-Face in Boulder, 17th to 19th of May. And I think I sent out an email saying Ed Mandel will participate in that and give a AWIPS update, and it'll also provide an opportunity to have another TIM. If Raytheon isn't actually physically there, we can still do a telephonic TIM from there with their participation.
Okay, great.
Yeah. But then that's in May. So then we still need to talk about having a face-to-face at the Raytheon Omaha facility.
And so, you know, maybe summer. And maybe that's, hope that's not too general. Give you an idea.
That helps a lot. Thanks.
Okay. Anybody going to be at AMS in 2 weeks?
Yeah, Frank Griffith. Yeah, I'll be at the AMS show. Actually, I'm giving a short one of those 15-minute papers.
Raytheon has a booth?
Yeah, and Raytheon will have a large booth, just slightly smaller than Lockmart's. And there'll be a AWIPS 2 live system there with live data. And I believe INSEP is going to be part of the booth, too, so you'll see the INMAP and the stuff INSEP's done in the same booth.
Okay.
That's correct.
Sounds good. I will be there as well. I don't know who else from this call will be there, but it'll be nice to see somebody who face-to-face, I guess.
I'll be there, Jordan. We can go over the action items.
I'm looking forward to that.
I know you are. In fact, let me just tell everybody that Jordan has agreed to write up the minutes of this meeting. So that's, we appreciate that.
Okay, thank you. Is there anything else? I was told 90 minutes, and it's 90 minutes, so...
Does anybody else have any other comments, questions? You can, in fact, an ongoing action item is to submit questions for consideration at any of these TIMs. The next one may be in May. I'm not sure if we'll have a telephonic TIM prior to that. We'll just see what, as we look at what comes out of this meeting, the viability of doing that. Ed, do you have anything else?
No, I just thank Jordan for doing this again, and the first one went great. This one seemed to go really well, and it kept us right on schedule. Thank you so much.
And thanks to Doug and Frank for contributing their expertise.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay, thanks all.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Have a good afternoon.
Bye.
Now exiting.